This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good Thursday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Mary Kitzmiller from Kemp, Texas, and you are listening to a special training episode of Horses in the Morning on Horse Radio Network for April 9th, episode 1143, Good Morning Horse World.
What is your favorite day of the week?
You never stop learning, you never stop understanding. It's more in depth than just riding a horse. Exciting, knowing that for the rest of my life I could work on this and I'll never stop learning.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us on this Thursday morning. We want to welcome Mary back. She's here the second Thursday of every month and has been with us for a number of months. If you want to hear her past episodes, just go to horsesinthemorning.com and search Mary Kitzmiller. And you'll find they'll pop up there and you can go back and take a listen. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. It was so good to actually get to spend some time with you in person at Road to the Horse here a couple of weeks ago. That was fun.
Oh, yeah. It was a great event, and I was running everywhere. It's probably the most crazy event I've done, and the fact that I don't think I sat down. And so I think it's been a week or two out, and I'm still recovering.
Well, it was fun, actually, to get to meet your mom, and we got her on the show. That was fun.
Yeah, I still have to listen to that. I'm kind of cautious.
Nervous?
But listening
yeah.
to it, I'm afraid she might have revealed my secret nickname.
No, she was good about that. Now I have to get back to her about that. But boy, what fun she was! I had a good time. I chatted with her all weekend long. It was a lot of fun getting to. And I see now where a lot of your mom comes through in you. So I could definitely see the family resemblance there.
Oh, yeah, and when people call on the phone, if I answer, I have to make an extra effort to, like, have a higher-pitched voice because we sound exactly the same. And so
yes,
people are just
do.
Like, hey, and they'll start talking about something. I have no idea what they're saying. I'm like, no, this is her daughter.
Well, and, you know, she kept talking about Mary Catherine, and it always took me a minute or two to figure out who she was talking about.
Because
I never call you, you know, Mary is what everybody calls you. So I, you know, she kept talking about Mary Catherine. I'm going, does she have another daughter? Oh, then I would don't.
Well, and that is by design on my part. My real name is Mary Catherine Kitzmiller, and she even had my name hyphenated so that hopefully, you know, because everyone's going to look at my birth certificate when they're talking to me. And so I went by Mary Catherine for a number of years until right around the time I was at that impressionable age of junior high, and there was a character on Saturday Night Live by the name of Mary Catherine Gallagher, and I got a little made fun of for that. Totally not because I was weird and awkward, but we just happened to share the same name, and so I started just going by Mary. And it was always fun at high school events like band rehearsals and stuff that parents came to, you know, band concerts, that one of my friends would say, hey, Mary. And then across the room, you just hear, Catherine. And it's coming from my mother. So needless to say, I was really popular in junior high and high school.
Well, it was fun. It was a good time. We're gonna talk a little bit more about the Road to the Horse just a little bit here at the beginning of the show to kind of wrap up. Where we are with that and where you go from here. And then we also have to hear about that new creature. But first, let's hear from Jennifer about what is coming up on today's show guest-wise.
On today's Training with Mary Kitzmiller edition, horse folks everywhere are ramping up for competition this season, so Mary's got some horse show preparation advice. And then mid-show, Shelby Hume talks about biomechanics and how they can make for a better performance from you and your horse. And loping confidently through the finish flags, Sean Patrick and Marcia Sapp stop by to talk Western dressage. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Thank you very much, Jennifer. Well, now, you know, for those of you that are new to Mary's episodes, Mary recently competed in Road to the Horse as a wild card, which meant she went in on Thursday with her horse Guthrie after training him up for a year and did a obstacle course competition and then a freestyle competition. And we had a great time watching everybody try and do the obstacles. And you know, you guys, you did great. And you were definitely a crowd favorite, by the way. I don't know if you heard the crowd, but.
Yeah, that is always good to hear. Well, it's kind of, it's so weird because it's not like a regular horse show. So before you go, they sequester you. You don't get your cell phone. You have to stay in a dark room. So you don't know how the person ahead of you is doing. And
is that what they do? I didn't realize that. So you're not watching your competitors.
No, and even afterwards, I don't even think I got to watch him afterwards. So let me tell you, especially last year with Jim Anderson who won, you know, you're in this warm-up pen and you don't get to see anybody before you, you don't get to see anybody after you, but you can hear the crowd. And I think he was right before me in every class. And, of course, he killed it last year. You know, I was right behind him in second place. But, I mean, he just murdered it. He was undoubtedly the guy who won it. And to hear the crowd just go crazy right before I had to go in.
And then you're up next.
Great. Yeah, perfect. And so, you know, that show works your nerves more than most. It's I always like to go and watch my competitors to see, okay, I need to do this on this obstacle because, you know, they had a little flub here and this is surprising a lot of the horses. Well, you know, in an effort to make it as fair as possible, they take all that out so you don't know. And the obstacle course, we didn't even get to look at until right before, and it had an obscene amount of obstacles. It was crazy. It was just a crazy time.
Which one did you think was the hardest? Which did you have the most trouble with, you think?
Well, you know what had me really flustered, and I'm embarrassed to say it. So we go in, and it's these insane obstacles, this huge teeter-totter, and we have to stand on a horse and ring a bell, and there was this rocket ship that had this little exhaust pipe that was blowing streamers out at your horse that we had to push, and of course my horse had never seen anything like that. But what had me coming back from the walkthrough like, oh my God, was we had a ground tire horse and go into an outhouse and sing the first verse of the national anthem. Well, they kind of wanted to usher us in and out to get the show on the road. I'm asking everyone, what's the first verse? What's the first verse? Because I don't know. I think the whole song is the first verse. So I'm freaking out. And then all of a sudden I'm like, do I know the words? Oh my God. And of course, under pressure, you know, I wasn't sure. So I am riding around the warm-up pen singing the national anthem. And, so that was stressed me out more than anything else. My horse was probably the most flabbergasted at the rocket ship. But we got through it. We survived.
Well, most of them just saying, oh, say, can you see? But they're out of the door. I mean, that's about where they got. There was, I think only one of them actually sang the whole, like you said, the whole first verse, which you're correct, is just the first verse. But nobody ever sings the rest of it, you know? So, yeah. But you're right. I mean, the pressure was on and they had a camera in there and it was mic'd and, you know, so. And it's not a flattering camera because it's looking up at you. So it's not a flattering camera either. But it was funny. It was good for the audience. I mean, it was definitely good for them. It was a lot of fun that way.
Had I had it, they did the same type of obstacle last year where we had to ground tire horse and go into the outhouse and count down, and there's a camera in there. And had I had any foresight last year and this year, I probably would have brought a newspaper in there and made a little funny and, had a little joke with the crowd. But, yeah, you go in there and, oh, my God, I don't even want to hear the audio from me singing the national anthem. It's my singing voice, I'm told, sadly, is really poor.
Well, Guthrie hung around, though. And some of the horses didn't do that. Some of them left. So, you know, that was kind of cool that he kind of hung around. And you could tell the audience was going nuts when the horses would walk off. So you could kind of the riders could kind of tell that that their horse was leaving town.
It was one of the few moments when you could hear those of you who were waiting to go, listening to the crowd going, oh, I wonder what's going on. Everybody's going crazy. The crowd was going crazy because something wasn't going well.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
And of course you don't know that until you're in there.
Right.
The Rooted Horse crowd, yeah, they're so awesome. They are very vocal and they want help. So every year it's really funny. So they were very helpful. I knew when the crowd went wild, my horse was kind of wandering around, so I had to go get him. But when the competitors go over the obstacle course, the Road of the Horse crowd seems to know the required maneuvers maybe better than the competitors. And so, you know, I think it was even Chris Cox who he had missed something, like picking up the horse's feet or something. The crowd is going nuts and yelling at him to pick up the horse's feet. So it's kind of a cool thing to have the crowd help you out like that.
Well, Chris Cox did end up winning the whole thing, and quite convincingly by the end. He definitely was hands above everybody else. I mean, in points and in crowd, being a crowd favorite, and just, you know, he just knows how to play the audience. He really does. He's a showman. He's a good horseman, but his horses were definitely ahead of the other competitors, both his horses. I mean, he would have won first and second if they were giving that. He would have gotten first and second with his two horses. There's no question about it.
Oh, yeah. And like I said before, this was probably one of the more top-notch groups I've seen at Road to the Horse. You know, I know all of them. I've ridden with all of them. And, they are really handy with starting colts. And Chris just went in there and blew it out of the water. And it's like the competition was made for him, because he not only knows, with Road to the Horse, being a good colt starter is not the only thing you need to be good at. And he just really had, he really understood what the event's about and how to get the crowd involved. And he's just a genius at it. And, so watching him,
he can be self-deprecating, and he's good at explaining things, but he also can be self-deprecating, and he'll make fun of himself and his horse when they screw up. He's not afraid to do that, and audiences love that. So he really, you're right, does know how to play to the audience, and he really becomes a showman that way. And if you look through the list of past winners of Road to the Horse or any major competition like that, you'll find the showman, the Dan Jameses and the Guy McLeans and, you know, all of those people out there who truly are showmen, and they know how to play to the audience. They're good with the horses, but they also have that second thing that not a lot of people have.
Well, and that is such a rare quality, because most of the genius horse trainers that I've been lucky enough to know or heard of are not good talkers. They're so good naturally that it's
I know, we've tried to interview a few of them.
Oh, my goodness. I pity you, because they're just old cowboys, and they have this uncanny ability to look at a horse and know exactly what to do. And when you have that kind of natural talent, you haven't screwed up as much as I have. It's hard to explain horsemanship to the layman for them. And so you ask them, you're like, oh, my gosh, how did you get your horse to do that? And they give you some kind of cryptic, oh, well, you know, you just got to know where their feet are. I'm like, what does that even mean?
Yeah, exactly. You know, they were even kind of saying some of that stuff when they were explaining during their training at Road to the Horse. And I'm going, I'm not even quite sure what that means. Especially in relating to what they were doing at the time, it kind of didn't make sense to me, but then I'm not a horse trainer either, so...
Well, and godfathers of natural horsemanship, you know, the Dorrances and Ray Hunt, They were famously cryptic and spoke in riddles. I'm like, are you just doing that for fun, or does that come natural to you? You know, I hear these guys who've ridden with them and worked for them, and they tell this story, you know, they reflect fondly on this story where it took them like 10 years to figure out what he meant. I'm like, I'll just take the answer now. That would help me out the most.
I don't have 10 years. I don't want to waste 10 years screwing up 25 horses in between. Just tell me what you mean. Yeah. What exactly does that mean? Well, what's in store for Guthrie now? You had so many, and I was with you some of the weekend. We were hanging out together. But you had so many people come up to you and say that Guthrie was their favorite. I mean, he definitely has a fan club that he developed through this last year. What happens with him now? I know you're going to keep him, right? Because you love this horse.
Oh, yeah. You know, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. He was bar none the best horse in that competition, and that's not to take away from anyone else. And you know, we placed right where we deserved. It was just had a few bobbles for a young horse, but he is the best horse that I've had a chance to train, and so I'm hanging on to him for sure. But he's, you know, the thing about him that's so cool is he's very trainable. And, you know, those Sixes colts, they're tough. They're not meant to be a horse that goes in for 3 minutes and puts on a show and then leaves and then they're done. That's all they need. You know,
they're meant to be ranch horses, aren't they? Aren't they meant to be ranch horses?
Work all day. Yes. And that was Powell before Guthrie was that way. You know, that horse could have hauled cows around for 8 hours. You know, he could have hooked on to an 1,100-pound steer and drug him around. And then he could have gone to the races that night and probably won. He was just a tough, and that's what they're meant to do. And, you know, they crossed a lot of the racing bloodlines with the cow with the cow horse bloodlines, and you get this horse that's just really gritty and real hardy and can dig down and work really hard for you all day. And those are the types of horses, they make really great seven-year-olds. It takes them a few years longer to sort of come into their own, but when they do, they're just amazing. And so to gear these horses up for a competition where, like this last year, the wild card competition was 2 hours. So to gear a horse up like that, to say, okay, you have to go in and show the best that you have over 2 hours, and you have to leave, and then you're done. And Guthrie, you know, was really game for that kind of thing. He's I think he's going to be a great show horse, but he still has a little bit of that toughness that the Sixes colts have, and I mean toughness in a good way. Just you know, can really dig right in and you know, work their heart out for you. And so I'm trying to figure out what to do next with him. He's so talented. I've worked him on a cow a time or two, and he's really, really game for that. So I'm thinking, you know, I think this year our immediate goal is to try to get qualified for the World Show, the AQHA World for Ranch Horse Pleasure. And so we're going to hit a couple of shows. I think the qualifying date ends the beginning of August. So we need to go rack our points up and get to that show. And then afterwards, you know, I have to decide whether we'll choose reining or cow horse events. But I think one of those two would be a really good fit for him.
Have they ever tried those 4/6 horses in endurance?
Oh, man, Powell would have been amazing. He probably had a heart that weighed 22 pounds. And I think now Guthrie had, because he was more cow horse, there's no racing blood immediately in his papers. Endurance would not be for him. He would be like, you know, when do we get to stop? Which is,
yeah, 5 miles
really
in, he'd be going, okay, I've had enough of this. We can go.
Oh man, I think they'd make really good endurance horses because that's what they're bred to do. They're bred to long trot across thousands of acres, checking fences and doing that kind of thing. So yeah, I think they'd make wonderful endurance horses. Not that I know anything about endurance, but I'm just guessing.
Well, now let's get to, you know, we all love Guthrie, but there's one thing that everybody wants to hear about. And I think we posted pictures on our Facebook page, and maybe we'll repost those so that they pop up at the top here. You, while you were at Road to the Horse, decided to do something a little wacky, and you bought a Z-Donk, which is a cross of zebra and a donkey. And it is the cutest thing ever. So tell us what now you have, tell everybody, you do have some mules and donkeys, right? You already are into that world.
We have Noah's Ark. We could repopulate the earth with animals if it's ever flooded over. We'd probably be set up to do that pretty good. So, yeah, we have mules and donkeys and poultry and cats and dogs and a parrot. And so we have everything. And I've kind of always wanted something sort of wacky to have around and train and put into something, you know, a demo or a show. And I looked at zebras for about a split second, but I wasn't sure a zebra would be the right fit. You know, too many stories about, you know, a friend of mine has a domesticated zebra, and this zebra is great for her. But if you're not her and you walk into this pen, it's sort of like prepare to die. Now, I've heard wonderful stories about zebras, too, about them being very trainable and great, but I just wasn't sure about a zebra, but I thought, what about a half zebra? So it would only be half the trouble. So, you know, I've just kind of always had that in my mind, and up in my Facebook feed pops this Z-Donk for sale, and she just happens to be 80 miles south of where I'm going to be in Kentucky, so it just kind of seemed destined to be. So we bought the Z-Donk and hauled her home from Kentucky. She got to spend a few days at the horse park.
And we got to meet her. I just posted a picture of the day we got to meet her. She does seem like a little sweetheart. The biggest ears ever, just huge ears. Have you had a chance? So what's her personality now that you got her home?
Yeah, well, she was really sweet and timid at the event, and I was really happy with how well she handled it. You know, obviously, she'd never been in a busy place like the horse park before, and she was really great and let everybody pet her and approach her. We actually had truck trouble on the way home, so we had to load her and unload her a bunch of times to get the truck in, and I was really worried about that because I didn't know her very well. And she handled that like a champ. And now that she's home, I'm starting to see the personality come out. She's already figured out when meal times are, so she's getting very adamant that I feed her. And I've got a small, she's going to go out on a pasture, but until I really get to know her, I've got a small turnout pen that connects to the barn. And the first day I went to turn her out in that turnout pen, just opened her stall door, I'm just casually walking to the gate to leave, and I just hear right behind me this, you know, she's running right behind me. I'm like, oh, my God. So when I turn her out, she's flinging the door open and running out of the pen because she comes out ready to rumble. She's kicking and bucking all over the place. And so she's made herself right at home. I haven't really broken to training her. I'm going to use positive reinforcement to train her. So the first steps of positive reinforcement is the targeting, getting your horse to touch an object. So it's going to be kind of slow going for a couple weeks until she figures out the targeting, and then we'll move right along. But yeah, she's doing good.
Now, let's get into our tip of the month here, and that is you're going to talk about what it is like to train, you know, other equids, mules and donkeys. Do you train them differently? Are they slow learners? Are they fast learners? I know you've been very successful with mules, even in showing across the country, what in English even. What's the difference?
You know, I heard, I think it was Pat Pirelli say once that a mule is like a horse, only more so. And that kind of rings true. Mules are, and you know, the Z-Donk is a hybrid. So from everyone I actually talked to, a very experienced zebra trainer. She uses her zebras in commercials, and she said that she tells people that zebras are like training mules, and then so people automatically chime in, she says they're like mules or donkeys. People automatically chime in with, oh, so they're stubborn, right? And she has to say, okay, now we have to have the mule talk. So these hybrids, The main difference between the what I found, the mules and the donkeys and the horse, is they have a much stronger survival instinct. They're very careful of themselves. They do not want to get into trouble. They do not want to get themselves hurt. So when your mule or donkey stalls up and you can't get them to go somewhere, that's them saying, you know, I have vetted this place. It is not safe. I don't trust you. I'm not moving. And you have to really work to gain their trust to tell them, if I tell you to go here, you need to understand that it's safe. You know, a lot of horses will just kind of blindly follow you, like, okay, whatever, I'll do it. But
so it's
kind
of
strong...
Mary, to do an analogy. So it's kind of like getting a husband to go to a Jennifer Aniston movie. They kind of lock up and say, I shouldn't be here. That kind of thing.
Yeah, because they know what's good for them. They know. You know, they're not going to get anything out of a generic. Yeah, which I think they're all the same. But
yeah, right, exactly. They were all bad. So, see, husbands are right.
Except for Office Space, that is a classic.
Okay, I might give you that one.
That's undefeated. That's worth seeing. But, so they have a strong survival instinct. And then the donkeys, they don't have the ability to run away at a million miles per hour and then think about it later. So the flight instinct is not quite as prevalent as it is with horses. Horses have the luxury of, you know, is that a plastic bag or a line? I don't care. I'm going to run 3 miles away and then I can stop and think about what that was. Well, donkeys are very concerned with conserving their energy. So they really have to think, you know, wait, is that a plastic bag or a lion? You know, I think it's a plastic bag, so I'm cool. I'm going to stay here.
Well, aren't they also good protectors? I mean, they use donkeys to protect fields of sheep and stuff like that. So they tend to be more, They tend to be more analyze the situation and if I have to, I'm going to attack. Whereas the horse, as you said, is more the flight response to it.
Yeah, they'll go quicker into that fight mode, and I have donkeys in my pasture. I have no problems with coyotes, and even all the pastures around me, I'm told, are rooted up by pigs, and I don't have that problem, and I'm pretty sure that's because of my donkeys. They keep all the varmints out. So we use the horses. Most horse training involves using the horse's flight instinct to your benefit. Well, the donkeys don't have that as strongly. So you have to oftentimes find another way around. And, you know, why is it worth getting into training hybrids? Because they are more difficult just because you do have to, you know, with a horse, oftentimes training is you find an open door and you walk through. Well, with a donkey or a mule, sometimes that door's closed. So you have to find a window and climb in. So with a horse, it's often easy to say, okay, you're not getting this right, so I need to stay in there until we end on a good note. But I found in training donkeys and mules, sometimes I have to completely change what I'm doing, try something else, and sometimes I have had to walk away and say, you know what, we're done today. It didn't end as I had hoped, but we will come back tomorrow. And donkeys and mules tend to soak on things really well. And so sometimes I've had a training session that I was like, you didn't get any of that, did you? And then the next day I came out and they've got it mastered.
Do their homework. They're practicing when you're not there.
Yes, they soak it all in. They're very thoughtful creatures. If someone says they're stubborn, it's because they've been outsmarted by one. I've been outsmarted many, many times. So people think the training is more difficult. But if you, the adage goes that the way you should train a horse is the way you must train a mule. And so training mules is really good exercise in changing your habits to thinking around situations and being patient and just waiting instead of trying to force something to happen. You know, the horses tend to give it up really quick, and I can theoretically intimidate a horse into doing what I want. The mules, that's really not going to fly as much. And it's funny because, you know, I spent several years going from trainer to trainer, working for different trainers and learning how to do what I do. And if they found that I rode mules, they'd be like, yeah, I trained a mule once. And then they'd have some story about how horrible it was. And I'm like, well, you know, it's so a lot of people train a mule once and they're really put off by it. It didn't work out for whatever reason. But if you can get it figured out, it'll really make your horsemanship that much better.
Well, yeah, I guess, you know, it's dealing with the worst common denominator, and then everything else seems easy, right? I mean, it's if you can do the mule, you can probably do a horse. You know, you even competed. You have a world championship with a mule, don't you?
I do. I believe I was the world champion. I think I was an amateur at that time. English equitation 19 and over. So I can always claim that I'm a world champion because it's true, and I have the buckle to prove it.
And that was on a mule. Now, was that in a class of mules, or were you the only mule?
It was the Mule World Show. It was NASMA,
okay,
which is North American Saddle Mule Association. But my good mule Emmett, oh, he's awesome. He's the coolest moving animal I have. And so I take him to a lot of open shows. And if it's a walk, trot, lope class, like I show him Western Pleasure, he doesn't get beat. It just doesn't happen. He's such a good naturally moving animal. And actually, I showed at this association, and I won everything but the walk jog, which I got third out of like eight people. You know, his lope is where his talents lie. And then the next week, another association that shows in the same arena put this huge banner on their website that they were banning mules and donkeys. They couldn't show. It wasn't allowed. And that's when you ride mules, that kind of happens from time to time. Some people, this one particular association I showed with, they loved them. They thought it was amazing. And they thought, you know, a lot of people have never seen a mule ride and ride at that level. And they're really cool. I mean, they can do anything a horse can. But then every once in a while you run into someone who, you know, they don't really buy into the whole mule thing and would rather not have them.
We have a friend that she's a chiropractor out in Norco, and she has competed out there in all kinds of competitions with her mule. She has the coolest mule, and it just has, you know, has won a ton of stuff with that mule in all different kinds of competitions. So, and it's because the mule is the one thing they are is consistent and steady. So she said, you know, I can go into a pen and I know what I'm going to get. It's not like with a lot of horses where you just aren't sure what you're going to get today. She said, I know what I'm going to get every day. I'm going to get the same thing every time I take that mule out.
And that is exactly right. You know, once they learn something, that is in their head forever. And I heard someone say it really well. She had a mule that she would go and ride out, you know, ride out on trails. And so to go out on the trails, she would ride it to the gate and open the gate and then turn around and close the gate off of her mule and then ride out on the trails. Well, one day she decided to leave the gate open and the mule would not budge. He said, no, this is my job. We close the gate every day. This is what we do. And all you do in that case is you just patiently say, no, today we're not. But, yeah, this goes for bad habits, too. Once you get those good habits ingrained, I mean, they are forever rock solid. They just don't go away on a mule. I don't find, like Emmett, I haven't ridden him in a couple years. I could hop on him right now and he'd be the same as he was a couple years ago. But that's the double-edged sword, is they remember the bad habits just as well. And Emmett was actually my first experiment in natural horsemanship. I bought all these videos, and I was going to learn how to do this. And this mule, I mean, you can just climb on him and go. He doesn't really need to be lunged. But I was bound determined. I was going to learn this new method. And so I had my special halter with, you know, the brand name halter, and I had the brand name training stick. And so I'm following the directions on the video, and he takes one look at me and takes off, dragging me on this nice new lead rope I have, busts through the gate, runs a couple miles down my road. And so I'm stubborn. I'm more stubborn than he is. So I'm like, no, we're going to get this. We're going to get this right. I let him get away with that three times. And he remembers it to this day. I ended up getting him to do a lot of great groundwork, and we advanced to the highest level you could do with the groundwork. But every once in a while, I'll see his eyes glaze over, and I know he's going to do
that's
it. And then there's nothing I can do. I can stop an 18-hand Belgian from dragging me off. I can get the leverage. I'm very experienced. That mule, he knows how to torque his body in just a way that I can't hang on. And so it's one of those things I'm like, you don't need to be lunged. You're fine. I can lead him anywhere, but lunging, he'll go around for about 15 minutes, you know, doing all the cool, you know, natural horsemanship stuff. And then he, I see his eyes. I see a look come over his eyes. And so that was something I let him get away with it a couple of times in my own stupidity, and it's a life he remembers that forever. So you just, I mean, training mules is like graduate work for horse trainers. You really got to be careful what you're teaching them.
So it's not something you would recommend for somebody that's training their first horse. Don't start with a mule.
Well, start with a mule. If you wanted to start with a mule, I would go and spend the money, and they are worth the money, on a good, just solid, broke, you know, bomb-proof mule. And
right.
You know, they'll take very good care of a rider because they take very good care of themselves. When I take him in on trails, I don't worry about where he's going. He picks the trail better than I do. He knows how to pick, and because he's very careful where he puts his feet. He's
well, which is why they use them like at the Grand Canyon. I mean, they use the donkeys at the Grand Canyon. We interviewed that guy. We're going to get to Shelby here in a second. Our guest is waiting. But we interviewed the guy who runs the concession of the Grand Canyon. He said there's never been a mule falling off, or a donkey, rather. There's never been a donkey that's fallen off. No, because they will preserve themselves at all costs. So he said they're not going to make a wrong step, and they don't.
Yeah, you can just.
Now, am I going to do that ride? No. Are you going to do that ride? Have you done that ride?
I have not. I have to think.
I'm not signing up for that one.
Yeah.
I'm not either. And he, you know what's funny? He actually told us, he said, horseback riders, actual experienced riders that come in, do worse on my Grand Canyon ride than the people who have never ridden at all, because they're trying to correct and they're trying to drive the donkey, whereas the others are just sitting there and letting the donkey do the work. He said the horseback riders are the toughest ones because they come in wanting to actually, you know, contribute to the equation when really they should just be sitting there. So, it was funny to hear him say that.
You give them their head and let them do their thing, and they know how. They again, you want an animal, and most horses have this as well. But you want an animal that wants to take care of itself. I don't think I've ever met a mule that didn't have a great concern over his own life, and so I always say, you know, what's the difference between a horse and a mule? Well, you know those movies where the cowboy's on the horse and they go jumping off the cliff together. Well, the mule would leave. Would let you jump off the cliff, but he'd stay behind. He's not going to do any of that nonsense. And they're very cautious of themselves, and you know they're not going to get themselves in trouble. So in that sense, then you know they just take care of their riders by association.
Well, why don't we introduce our first guest and bring her into the conversation?
Okay, we have Shelby Hume out of Kentucky, and we're going to bring her on today to discuss biomechanics. How are
good
you,
morning.
Shelby?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Just getting recovered from Murder the Horse. It was a crazy ride.
You might need a couple more weeks for that.
Yeah, I think so. Actually, I'm going to Mexico, so...
That's the perfect solution. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, it was so much fun. Sorry.
I can't wait. It's going to be, I'm counting down the days, I tell you what.
Was super fun to have you up here and to watch all of Road to the Horse and see a bunch of the coverage happening on the RFD TV. So it's pretty exciting time.
Oh, you're such a lucky dog. Living just, what is it, half an hour from the horse park? I tell you what, if I could move to Kentucky, I definitely would.
I understand.
So I wanted you on today. Obviously, I stayed at your place. I stayed at Shelby's place for a few days before Road to the Horse, and it's a beautiful farm and in the rolling hills of Kentucky. It was really gorgeous. And we got to talking a little bit about biomechanics. And so for those of us who don't know what the heck that means, and I barely have a grasp of it myself, can you give us a crash course in what biomechanics is and how it applies to horsemanship?
Sure. I tell you, I've come from a varied background on horsemanship. Had some experience in showing and reining, and for a short period of time was an NRHA judge, and done a very small bit in the hunters and jumpers and showing dressage and just all sorts of different things. And I've been very lucky to have a wonderful group of mentors help me in my horsemanship. But one person that especially has influenced me is Karen Rolfe out of Florida, and her vision of dressage naturally started bringing more to my attention how we can help our horses stay healthy and happy for many years. I know for me, many of the people I help, and for myself as an individual, I'm very interested in having my horses stay looking gorgeous for many years into their life. And also, how can I make the responsibility of carrying me easier for the horse? So those are things that have really become my passion in not only furthering my own education, but also helping other people with that and using the principles of natural horsemanship and dressage combined, which is honestly a perfect marriage to help people progress in those interests. So I know sometimes in our horsemanship, we have to start out becoming more safe, and thereby it becomes more fun. Then I think it's a wonderful opportunity to start working on, okay, how can I talk to my horse about conversations and relaxation, energy and balance, and in the vision of dressage naturally, finding that sweet spot of those three elements so that the horse enjoys being there, finds not only peace from our information, a place that we both can enjoy together, but that both of our bodies are functioning in a way that feels good.
Yeah, I think, you know, and that's the reason I wanted to have you on today. I think it's a really interesting topic, and I'm really surprised we don't hear more about it, especially on the Western side of things. And it's something that I myself have only just started looking at, and my first inkling of it a couple years ago was when I was researching clicker training, which is something I'm very passionate about. I noticed this girl working with a horse at Liberty, and the horse was just perfectly collected. It just was gorgeous, and it never fell out of collection. It had no tack on it, no reins, nothing. And I asked her, I'm like, oh my God, how did you do this? How, because I want to do this with my horse. How in the world did you do this? And she told me something really interesting, because she had a classical dressage background. She said, you know, once you teach the horse to travel in true collection, they like it, so they keep doing it. And, of course, my horse trainer brain could not wrap around that. I was like, no, that's nonsense. I can't believe you're saying that, because, you know, my background comes from, oh, we need to tie the reins back to the saddle to get the head down and blah, blah, blah. I mean, just a bunch of nonsense. And so I couldn't fathom how a horse would actually enjoy traveling in collection, because I've spent my life trying to make it happen with various tools and methods and exercises, and it always seemed like I had to constantly remind my horse. And so it was kind of my first inkling that maybe I'm not sure what collection is, because if my horse could find real collection, maybe he would really enjoy it and keep going in that manner.
Yeah, and I think that oftentimes, like Karen will mention, thinking of it as a state of mind and a posture rather than a certain style of frame that we're trying to make them go in. Think about ourselves even in our posture as we travel about, and we've maybe all had moments where somebody reminded us to have a little bit better posture. There is a state of mind that also comes with that, and I think that's so key when we think of our horses without us in the field when they're playing and how wonderfully brilliant and beautiful they are. on their own, and then, okay, how can we not only maybe help them even develop more beautifully and more confident, but do so while they're carrying us, which, you know, to me seems like a rather big job. So I think that a lot of times biomechanics are, people might not delve into them. Maybe they're presented in a very scientific way, which is great. Don't get me wrong. There's some wonderful people out there that present the subjects very, very technically. But I think it's a great thing if we can start it just using clear, simple terms anybody can do with their horse, starting out with what we might call the sweet spot concepts. And then if you become very passionate about it, sure, carry it forward. Go to some seminars that are more technical. But I think that it should be approachable to any person who owns a horse.
Well, and I'm with you on the technical stuff. You know, I have people kind of discuss it, and they'll say, oh, you know, their fourth vertebrae needs to be flexed at this exact point, and this has to be at 33-degree angles, and they're starting to go into this intricate anatomy of the horse. And I'm like, just tell me where to put his head. Obviously, it is more, it's very intricate and complex, and it's worth delving into, but my eyes kind of glaze over when the words get above two syllables. And so mm-hmm. I think it's great that there are people out there that are trying to make it a little bit more bite-sized, at least to get started. And one thing I was fascinated to find out, you know, I've been on Google kind of searching about biomechanics and what it means, and that a lot of outlying problems, lameness and digestive issues you know, horse being stiff on one side or the other, can actually be boiled down to this concept of getting the horse to travel in balance. So what are some of the problems that might occur in my horse that, you know, are a result of maybe he's not as balanced as he should be, that maybe I wouldn't think about?
Well, I think it can crop up or show itself in many ways. So I'll give a couple of examples that might not always be the horse, but might be clear for us to understand in a situation like this. We might have a shopping cart at the store that has that one wheel that's just not in alignment, and it's kind of wagging about, and you're the only person in the grocery store pushing it through the aisle, making all the noise. It's difficult to steer and handle. Well, adding more speed to that situation, adding a walk, trot, and canter, let's say, to that shopping cart is not going to make the situation better. What will make the situation better is getting the shopping cart in alignment. So, for instance, if we have a horse that's concerned about being out of a good posture to travel in with a human on its back, let's say, although we would want to practice these principles a little bit on the ground to also observe the horse, but adding a trot and a canter to a horse that's out of balance is not necessarily going to be a good idea. Won't be comfortable to us for sure. Certainly won't be comfortable to the horse. So it could be a person not able to pick up a certain lead. It could be a person that's riding horses like he is just careening around at the canter. So those can be some ideas that would crop up, let's say, from coming from a horse that's out of balance, and trying to help him find a better balance is going to get everything better. Another way it might crop up is, it could be, let's say we have a horse that isn't as forward in its energy, and maybe offering up willingly a nice energy. So it's hard to steer, the feet aren't going, they're sort of sticky. So for that horse, we might try and address playing something like we would call in dressage naturally the number game, and having them sustain a certain type of energy level on their own without being nagged. And then, gosh, this horse is so much easier to steer and guide and direct. And I think that those are principles to start from. And, of course, the element of relaxation, we'd like to see everything begin and end with relaxation. That can be key with, let's say, the thoroughbred off the track here in Kentucky. That sometimes is a very valuable element for those type of horses. So it can exacerbate itself in many different characteristics in our partners. And sometimes, without knowledge in biomechanics, we just might hear people say, well, the horse is being stubborn. Well, I don't really feel that way about horses. I don't feel that that's the way they want to be, or is even part of their makeup. Instead, we need to help show them not only a better way of going, but a better way of being able to communicate with them while we're riding them. As a mentor of Karen's would say, we're trying to have dressage help the horse become more comfortable transportation. That might mean not only how they travel across the ground, but it also might mean an element of asking the horse to do things, you know, whether it's just simple turning or guiding, whatever it might be. That would seem like an honorable pursuit to have our horses become more comfortable transportation.
Well, and you mentioned the stubbornness. I think that's kind of a great throwback to what we were talking about with training hybrids earlier. And I think, you know, when people say the horse is being stubborn or mean or silly or, you know, or they're attributing a lot of things we'd say about a person, oftentimes that's just not the case. They don't have an agenda. So if something's going wrong, it's usually not because the horse is trying to one-up you. And if you're getting outsmarted by horse, maybe you should train parakeets or something. But which I say that, but I've totally been outsmarted by horse. So I think it's the more that I learn, you know, on this subject and many others, the more I realize your horse is not trying to one-up you and not trying to think around you and make a fool of you. It's usually because something's out of whack. And I heard Buck Brandeman say, you know, I really liked your analogy. And I heard Buck Brandeman had a good one as well. If your check engine light comes on in your car and you punch out the dash, does that solve the problem? Well, the check engine light's not on anymore. And so that's kind of the same thing. Yeah, so, you know, problem solved. I don't see the light, so we must be good. Well, obviously, we know that's not the case. But with horses, that's kind of how we treat it. We put Band-Aids on things or, oh, your mouth is gaping, so I'm gonna put a trap shutter on it, as the Westerners would call it, a cavesson, and I'm just going to cinch it up really tight. Now you can't open your mouth, no problem. Well, why is the horse opening his mouth? There's got to be a reason. Sometimes it is just an ingrained habit and you have to live with it, but oftentimes it means that something's out of whack. So how would you go about, if I wanted to learn more about this, how would I go about doing it? And what are some things I can start doing with my horse today that might help me get on a path to finding more balance?
That's a great question. And oftentimes answered by a lovely person, as we've all probably heard of, Ray Hunt. And he would say, it depends, but there would be the possibility of pursuing this information, let's say in a physical clinic you travel to with your horse. That some people really find those beneficial, and we cover a lot of this information in a 3-day clinic. And sometimes for some people, let's say that's not possible. They don't have a truck and trailer. They can't travel to a destination. So then there's, especially in this day and age, many outlets to do some online learning. And, of course, one of my favorite outlets would be doing the virtual arena with Karen Rolfe, where she offers a sweet spot course in a 6-month format. So you release different modules for yourself as you're progressing through this course. You would learn about, how do I speak to my horse about relaxation, energy, and balance? What about myself and my posture? What about connection with the reins? Subjects along those lines. There's videos to complement that. There's also video coaching. I'm thrilled to be one of the coaches in that program for that, where we receive videos from students, and then we might schedule a phone call or a Skype call. So that's also a wonderful outlet. And the 6-month period of time is just a great period of time to really delve in, not put it up on a shelf or something, but let's really look at these subjects. We have this period of time to get through these modules. Then there's handouts and everything you get to keep and print out. Another way might be pursuing somebody who has like a monthly video classroom. And Karen also has one of those that she offers on her site. So there's many others out there as well. And it might just simply be buying a book that could start teaching you a little bit more. Karen has a book and DVD. There's many other ones out there on the market. But I think we're so lucky in this day and age to not have an excuse for not educating ourselves at least a little bit. There's many, many outlets and many ways to the top of the mountain. And then to address the second part of the question, what can I do today? Well, one of the best ways would be, I think everybody has a way to observe their horse, whether it's loose or whether they're connected to it with a halter and lead. You wouldn't have to have a round pen or anything like that. But you can observe the horse as they travel around you and do use adjectives of how, if you were to describe the most beautiful horse in the whole world, or you were to envision a YouTube that's your favorite YouTube, your picture of what you want your horsemanship to look like, well, how many of those adjectives match how your horse is traveling today? How does your horse look as he moves across the ground? Would you use terms to describe him like short and choppy, or would it be smooth? Would it be reach or adjustability from a shorter stride? We wouldn't maybe even use collective at this point, to a longer stride. Does my horse have the ability? I'll often ask people, watch them as they set their front foot down and think about where that footprint is in the ground. And then as the same side hind leg comes forward, how close did they get to that print? Were they behind it? And if they were behind it, how far? Were they, did they reach in front of it? This amazingly natural mover. Did they at least set their hind footprint in the front footprint? Those will just start being some ways to look at your horse in a slightly different way, not just, I want to go ride today, but, okay, so how does my horse go? If he's loose in a round pen, is it as easy for him to pick up the canter on both leads? Does he speed up the gait that he's in before he picks up the canter, which is probably a reflection of a little bit of loss of balance, depending on what the trot or walk looked like before that canter? All these kinds of things can start giving us some empowerment of saying, here's this picture of how I want my horse and I to look like, and where did we start today, and what words do we look like that picture we want to look like, and what words could we maybe seek improvement in? That's a baseline to get started then. That gives us some empowerment, like, well, my horse clearly has energy, but I don't think he's balanced. That, things like that will help get somebody started right away. And just thinking about the overall posture and appearance of the horse is key.
Yeah, you know, that was one of the surprising things I found. I am totally, you know, you spoke about there's really no excuse not to learn at least a little bit. I am a total internet, YouTube, Google junkie. And when I'm not riding, I'll spend my hours at night, you know, looking at YouTube videos, looking at Google and finding, you know, some of it's junk, a lot of it's junk, it's the internet. But then there's some really good gems to mine in the internet. I love the internet. But one of the things I'm noticing is these trainers who are very concerned about getting their horse to travel correctly, you see these amazing before and after videos and pictures of this horse that, you know, is kind of a plain Jane looking horse, pretty short strided, you know, probably has a lot of muscling up under his neck rather than up over his top line. And you see this transformation in these horses that, you know, within a year or two, they look, oh my God, they look amazing. And they look like a completely different horse. And I was really surprised at how much you can, how much you can change about a horse, you know, how they're put together and how they travel, just by changing up their training. And so I'm really interested in trying it with Guthrie because he's a bit choppy himself. And I know a lot of that is natural, but I think, you know, I'm really interested in trying to improve that over the years and seeing if I can get him to travel a little bit better, at the very least more comfortably for him.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we would hope that when we went to somebody to learn as a person, that they would put 100% into us. I would not want to go teach a student and think to myself, well, you know, it's Timmy, so I don't want to, you know, push things too hard. I should probably just give them 80%. No, I would want to give every human 100% of my ability to try and help them. And I think we love our horses, but I think that's key when we go to play with them as well. Some people will be, well, I just trail ride. I hear that a lot. And that's okay. I think trail riding is extremely difficult, by the way, but you never know what's going to pop up. But it's also how we look at our own horse, and that, yes, this is my horse. Let's say his name is Star, and I want to see Star develop into the most gorgeous animal I can. And referencing what you were saying, I've seen that many, many times with many people's different horses. And Karen has many examples on her website, pictures before and after, and horses that look more gorgeous in their 20s than they did at 5. And I just think that's, wow, what an honorable, wonderful pursuit to try and give our friends. And I think, like you said, just how can we develop them to their best ability, to their 100%? And that starts with us having 100%.
I was just going to say,
Sorry,
Shelby,
Glenn.
We're running out of time here, so we're going to have to wrap. I just chuckled when you said Timmy, because isn't that the name I would hate to be a Timmy, because that's the name we always use for the guy who's only doing 50% is Timmy.
Well,
it's
I was trying to pick a name of somebody. I know,
but it's the name that everybody always picks is Timmy, the poor Timmy
out
there.
Timmy's always stuck in a well somewhere, so, you know.
Timmy's always the one that's just halfway there, you know. He's hitchhiking
that's
alongside
so
the road and never quite makes it, Timmy. Anyway, thank you, Shelby. What's the website where they can find
you? They can find me at just simplyhumehorsemanship.com, and I also have a resources page there where some people have influenced me in my pursuits. And as you can tell, I'm super excited about the subject and about helping people with it, and I just so appreciate the opportunity to be on today.
Very good. Thank you very much, Shelby. We appreciate you being here. It's Hume Horsemanship, H-U-M-E, horsemanship.com. And we want to also thank Shelby for taking such good care of Mary when she was in Kentucky. We appreciate that, too. Well, we're going to take a quick break for our song, and then we're coming back with our next guest. We have Sean Patrick and Marcia Sapp coming up, who we also saw at Road to the Horse. But first, we have to take a break for our song. We have Adrian here today with a song called Boots and Pearls, and I'm playing this because we saw plenty of that at Road to the Horse.
Boots, that's what I wear. Seems fair with my blue jeans, diamond ring, and roses in my hair. I rode a bronc, he was tough, the boys all laughed, we'd take a lot too young, but you know we were all just let seems fair. Roses in my
Well, that's Boots and Pearls by Adrienne. You can find all of her music at buckaroogirl.com. You are listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek here with Mary Kitzmiller on the Mary Kitzmiller Training episode that we do once a month. And, of course, it is the second Thursday of every month. We've got Coach Jen in the producer chair today. And we're going to bring on our next guests here, both of who we saw at Road to the Horse. Sean competed there also as a wild card competitor. We have Sean Patrick. Good morning, Sean. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Glenn. How are you doing?
Good. And we also have Marcia Sapp, who's been a guest on shows here on the Horse Radio Network over the years. Good morning, Marcia.
Good morning, Glenn. How are you this morning?
Great. Now, before we get started, Marcia, bear with me for a second, because Mary mentioned earlier in the show that one of the things that you guys had to do as wild card competitors in the obstacle course was you had to go into an outhouse and sing the Star Spangled Banner while your horses were hanging around outside the door wondering what the hell you were doing. And I just happened to have a recorder going during that time.
Oh, no.
Mary didn't know about this, Sean. And now, the sound quality is not great here for everybody listening at home, but because I was recording this in the audience. But the first person you'll hear is a certain co-host of mine. And then the guy who gets the words all wrong will be Sean. So
this is my show, and I vehemently object.
Yeah, but Mary, I have the button, so
okay.
That's you lose. Yeah, here we go. I'm not even going to play the rest of that because you can't hear it with the audience going. Once you sang O Canada, you could have just shut up and not done anything else. You were good.
That was fun. I thought it was good for a chuckle.
I'm sorry the quality wasn't any better. I really wanted to hear Mary's very sped up version of the song. Your tempo was a little fast there, Mary. I'm just saying.
My heart was pumping. I was hearing the recording. I'm like, who let that chipmunk on the radio?
That was funny. Well, we're not here to talk about that. What we're here to talk about today is one of the fastest growing disciplines in the horse world. I think I can safely say that, and that's Western dressage. Marcia, you know, we talked about Western dressage, you know, over the past couple of years and through the battle between the two organizations and all that stuff. And, you know, we had them both on and all that. It seems like 20 years ago now. But it's really only been a couple of years, and it truly is one of the fastest-growing disciplines, isn't it?
It is. It is. We are approaching our third year of Western dressage being USEF sanctioned and recognized. And I don't know if I've seen anything in my lifetime grow as fast as we've seen Western dressage growing. Last year was my first year at the World Championship Western Dressage Show in Oklahoma, and the entries were huge. It was huge, and people were there from everywhere in the country and Canada, and the classes were filled, and people were excited about this.
I want to delve into that a little bit before we get to you know, what makes it tick and everything. Why do you think that is? Do you think were there a lot of people out there that just can't do sliding stops and fast turns? Or is it people who were trail riding before that are getting it like into the obstacle classes as well? That's becoming very popular now. Do you think that it's those people that were only trail riding and now are looking to do something a little different? Who's getting into it?
You know, I think the people that are getting into this Western dressage is diverse, as diverse as the horses that are in it. you have a section of folks that are intimidated by the big, powerful warm bloods that don't have a horse that's capable to compete at the higher levels because they
on
don't
the
have
English
the big,
side,
powerful warm bloods on the English side, yep, that are looking into this as an alternative for their horses. I think we're looking at people who see it as a valuable cross-training opportunity for their existing horses, whether they be competitive trail horses, competitive reining horses, competitive Western pleasure horses. I think people are seeing it as a valuable cross-training tool for those horses as well. And I think you're seeing it in those section of folks that have never had experience showing, and they want to find something fun and positive to do with their horses. And the Western dressage has a lot of appeal because you can really start at an elementary level at just the walk and jog and work your way up with your horse with progressive training and with the progressive tests that are offered in Western dressage. So I think we're seeing a pretty big cross-section of folks that are interested and excited about it. I, of course, come from a dressage background. I compete in English dressage at the USDF level. And I had a horse last year that I showed that was a national champion at third level in USDF, which is English dressage. But my horse also went to the World Western Dressage Show, and he was a reserve world champion last year. So I was able to cross-train my horse and to do two completely different disciplines with him that really made him a better horse. So you've got
so he wasn't in the middle of he wasn't in the middle of the test going, should I do a lope? Should I do a trot? Should I do a canter? And he ends up with a lope, canter, trot. He didn't get confused in the middle.
You know, I mean, people ask about this. People ask this to me all the time. The difference in between a lope and a canter. How do I know if my horse is jogging? How do I know if my horse is trotting? And you know, the judges for Western dressage are so well educated on this, that, you know, the gait depends on what's best for the horse.
Okay. So
they're best for that individual horse.
Gotcha. So you're seeing all different types of horses, not just quarter horses in there or Appaloosas?
No. I mean, we saw at the World Show, we saw a lot of quarter horses. We saw paint horses. We saw half slingers. We saw, of course, my Mustang. We saw a couple of Andalusians and Lusitanos, Frisian. We saw all sorts of different horses, and the great thing about the Western dressage is that they're offering gated horse classes as well, so those folks with the gated horses can also participate, and their horses are being judged according to the way that they go naturally.
Okay, don't tell
Do
me your
you...
horse won the gated class too, because then I'm not going to believe you.
That what?
I said, don't tell me your horse won the gated class too.
No, my horse did not.
Okay.
My horse did not go in the gated horse class, but maybe I'll get to ride one here in the next couple of years and do that too. It looks like fun.
Mary?
Do you recognize Z-Dunks is my question? Because I'm totally on board if you do.
Do I recognize what?
Z-Dunks, which is a zebra-donkey hybrid.
Oh, you know, I am willing to bet that the classes will be open to those horses as well. Would you like to come this year, Mary? We'll look for you.
Yeah. If you let my Z-Donk in, I'm game.
I think that would be great. I think we had more breeds represented at the World Championship Western Dressage Show than probably any other show in the United States last year. It was fantastic.
Mary, you really have to get to the point where you're doing something with it first. Before you bring it to
I should probably. Can
thanks.
I lead her in the pin with,
yeah.
and shake
yeah.
a bucket?
They
of
have
a
lead line
her.
Class for zebra donkey crossbred.
Yeah.
Maybe that.
Well, we are
be
talking.
Perfect.
We are talking about Mary Kitzmiller here, so I'm sure we'll see that Z donk be going around Bridalist in just a couple of weeks.
Oh, she goes around Bridalist now.
Yes, Bridalist now. Yeah. That's right. It's the bridle that's the problem.
You do a great 5-meter circle as I'm running around with the grain.
Sean, where do you come into play in Western dressage?
Well, actually, it's kind of a natural step for me to take toward it because we have so many students that are really interested in developing their horses, but they're not necessarily ready to jump into the reining pen, and they really don't want to get into the AQHA showing circuit. But they want to have a way to give themselves some smaller goals that they can build on. And with the dressage test, you can do that. So you can jump in with your horse, a quarter horse, or whatever kind of horse you have, and you can do the early tests. And as you develop your horse and as you get better, you can just improve the level of the testing, which takes away all the intimidation for a lot of these recreational and, you know, people that want to show their horses but aren't maybe professionals or open riders that do this every day. So I spend a lot of time teaching the foundation work with horses, with people, teaching body control and simple dressage movements anyway. So I'm excited to get more involved and even take a couple of my own horses this year and do some testing. And I'm excited to do a clinic with Marcia in a week and a half. We're going to kind of leapfrog each other. I'm going to do some foundation exercises and lessons in the clinic, and she's going to come in the hour after me and give the ins and outs of Western dressage and also do some foundation lessons and whatnot. And we're just going to go back and forth for 2 days with two groups. So I'm looking forward to seeing how all that turns out, and I think there's a lot of excitement with the people that are attending. So,
well, Sean, I just wanted to tell you, I was just on EquestrianCollections.com and ordered you up some white breeches, so they'll be there in time.
Okay.
Mary, you actually had a serious question.
I'm very vulnerable right now because I have a head cold, so I'll probably end up wearing them. Oh, dear.
Yeah, you need the little, I don't know what you call it, their little top hat and tails. I think that would be precious.
Yeah, it would. Yeah. We could put a top hat on Sean. We could make that happen.
I'd do it.
You would.
I would do it.
So anyway, so I'm looking at your clinic flyer, and it's saying that it is a Western dressage and balanced horsemanship clinic. Sean, can you elaborate on what you mean by balanced horsemanship?
Well, I was more, my focus for my one-hour sessions throughout the 2 days will be on body control. So I'm going to talk about the training pyramid that you would see in dressage texts and how that applies to the Western horse. And I think as we kind of get into the topic with the riders and we start talking about developing a horse from beginning to end, that people will start seeing that quality is quality and good horsemanship is good horsemanship regardless of the style. So you can be riding various styles, but you're still interested in rhythm and relaxation, and you're still interested in good impulsion, and you're still interested in, you know, subtle signaling and a horse that responds willingly and is carrying themselves in a weight-bearing posture that's healthy for them and so forth. So I think that as people educate themselves and then actually try doing what we're doing with their horses, they're going to see that there really isn't this big divide between the disciplines. And I think the first people through the door right now doing Western dressage might get, you know, pointed at and ridiculed a little bit because it might seem a little dorky to some, but it really isn't. It's just a fun test that's not as intimidating as it might sound, and I think the people in the Western styles can lend themselves to this and still do their other performances, such as reining or pleasure or trail or hunt seat.
Well, I think, you know, especially from the reiner's point of view, this, I don't know where the wind's coming from. It's not me, I'm inside, but from the reiner's point of view, I've noticed a lot of reining guys are starting to sort of do this cross training. They're getting into ranch pleasure and other classes because, you know, when you bring your horse into a reining pattern and the stops are always in the same place and, you know, the spins are in the same place and lead changes are in the same place, when you can bring him in and here's a pattern where you're not going to turn the corner and run down and stop, and your horse has to, you know, maybe come around the corner and listen to you because he's got to perform a 20-meter circle or what have you. And so I think it's a really great way, even if you've got just a really tuned-up reining horse, to sort of relax their mind and put them at ease and give them a different pattern to play with, because, you know, all the reining patterns are very similar, and so they kind of get into this routine where they think, you know, oh, I know what's coming next. Well, when you take them to something like Western dressage, you're gonna mix things up for them, and I think it can really calm the horse that's relaxed and really freshen things up for the campaigned show horse. So I think that's really interesting. I definitely like to get into this, and I think it really ties in with the biomechanics about getting the horse to travel relaxed. So you mentioned training pyramid. Can you give us a crash course on what that is, and probably have Marcia weigh in on that as well?
I think one thing that a lot of riders don't fully understand, at least I didn't as a younger rider, before I learned what I've learned, is that things have to go in a certain order. You can't immediately jump to a level or an education level when a horse doesn't even have the basics before that. So everything has a prerequisite, and in order to develop a horse properly, you do have to go in a certain order. And the training pyramid is just that. It points out what your foundation is all the way up to the highest level, and what you know, you don't immediately work on collection when you start a colt. You might immediately work on finding some rhythm at a walk, trot, you know, a canter, and you work on relaxation. Because until they accept you and until they, you know, get rid of their uncertainties, they're not going to be able to perform much else. So it just shows you in what order things should be taken care of. And Marcia, what do you think about the training pyramid? How does it apply to you and your students? Do you refer to it often?
We refer to it all the time. And interestingly enough, this was actually discussed at Road to the Horse last week. We talked about the clinicians creating rhythm and relaxation in the round pen with the young horses they were starting. First, the horses needed to be relaxed, and that's the bottom of our training scale. That is the foundation that we build upon. And then the horses had to have rhythm, rhythm at the walk, rhythm at the trot, rhythm at the lope. And the clinicians that rode to the horse built these things while they were sending their young horses around the round pen. And when we saw the clinicians working with their horses, we talked very much about that. The clinician worked in the horse on the ground in a manner where they were rhythmic with what they did with their motions, where the horse carried a rhythm at the jog and at the lope as it was going around the round pen. And rhythm and relaxation creates a quiet horse because they know what to expect. Without rhythm in your riding, the horse is erratic and always looking for the next thing. And then after we get rhythm and relaxation, we talk about straightness and impulsion from the hind legs. And both of those things make the horse's job easier. If the horse is driving from the hind legs, it's able to become more uphill and more light. And, of course, the horse's job is easier, making it more relaxed and, of course, making our job easier. And then we move up the scale to suppleness and bending and, of course, collection being the end result. But it's only after we've developed the other things first. And, you know, that rhythm and relaxation is important in everything we do with our horse, from grooming to walking to lunging to riding. That is the foundation upon which we build on. And we saw that even with the colt starting last week, which I was so pleased to watch and hear about.
Yeah, well, guys, we're going to run. That's always. Oh, sorry, Glenn. Go ahead.
I was just going to. We're running out of time here. We only have a few minutes left, and I wanted to get in the information about the clinic. It's April 18th and 19th at one of the most beautiful places in Florida, at the Grand Oaks Resort and Museum. And one of the things I noticed on here, which you never ever see, and I wanted to ask you about it real quick, is it says auditors are also welcome to bring their horses. You don't ever see that.
No, well, the Grand Oaks has trails, it has fields, it has multiple arenas. They have driving carriages that you can participate with. There's a bistro. It's quite a beautiful property.
It is a neat
so
place.
If someone wants to come and trail ride for a couple hours in the morning and audit the rest of the day, or maybe audit the entire day and ride at night, they can still come with their horse and grab a stall and camp overnight or stay locally in Lady Lake at the nice hotels right there. And they can still be a part of it and not even be a part of the clinic. Of course, we welcome them to be a part of the clinic, but for friends that want to come and audit and have a nice riding weekend, this is your chance.
And it's only $30 a day to audit. It's only really $225 to participate. Are there openings still? This is coming up next weekend. So.
Yes, we have two groups. We have a group for Marcia and a group for myself. And so if you ride with one of us, you will audit the second half. So we're going to leapfrog 1 hour on, 1 hour off throughout both days. And there are a couple people that are doing both, so they'll be in the saddle 2 full days.
All right, very good. And where can people, Marcia, find out more information about this?
You can go onto Sean's Facebook page. Go to Sean Patrick or myself, Marcia Hartford Sapp. It's on our Facebook pages. Sean also has a website. Sean, what is that website? That I'm sure the information is on at this time as well.
Yeah, SeanPatrickTraining.com.
And we also put a link on our Facebook page at Horses in the Morning also. You'll find it there. And while you're there, if you head down to Grand Oaks, you have to take a tour of the Carriage Museum. That is Gloria Austin's carriage collection of hundreds of carriages. And it's just amazing, especially, you know, I'm a driver, so all us drivers love to look at carriages, but even non-drivers will love the collection there. If you two haven't seen it, you have to go in and check it out. It's absolutely one of the best carriage collections in the world.
Oh,
really,
yes,
cool.
I love it. I loved walking through there the times that I have.
Yeah, it's just neat. It is a really cool place. It's worth going down to see Grand Oaks and the clinic at the same time, but they're both pretty special. Thank you guys for joining us. We really appreciate it. It was good to see you at Road to the Horse.
Thanks. Great being on.
All right. Thank you so much, Glenn.
Good luck next weekend. And the weather should be absolutely perfect. This is the time of year when we enjoy being in Florida, and then in another 3 weeks it'll be too hot. So just saying, you got a couple of weeks. Next week will be perfect. You'll be fine. Weather will be great. Mary, what do you have coming up as far as events and clinics here before we run out of time? Mary's going to give us a call back because her connection went south on us. We'll get her back on here. And in the meantime, we wanted to say that tomorrow is Really Bad Ads Day. So at equitymfg.com, Really Bad Ads, you can send your ads to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. It's everybody's favorite time of the week here on Horses in the Morning. So go ahead and do send your ads in. And we will get them on the air. When you go to Craigslist and look for the really bad ads, make sure to copy and paste the entire ad into the email to Jennifer. We have great prizes, of course, as we always do on Fridays. And we will definitely get them on for you. And don't forget that we're playing for a EquityMFG.com Flex and Fork every single month. Anybody that submits an ad, their name will be put in the hat, and we'll draw out one winner every month. And at the end of the year, we're going to be giving away a $300 Shaken Fork at the end of every year, or at the end of this year, rather. So if you've submitted an ad during the year, your name will be put in to win a $300 Shaken Fork. Are you back, Mary?
I am back. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, your sound went south on us, but you're back now. So tell us what's coming up clinic-wise for you.
I've got a clinic in Kansas, April 25th and 26th, and we are going to be covering liberty and positive reinforcement training. And I've got that up on the website, and then I've got a clinic in Deerfield, Ohio, May 30th and 31st, and we're going to do some advanced riding and obstacle work, and then one the next weekend, June 6th and 7th in Midland, Ohio. The Midland clinic is full in Ohio, but the Deerfield clinic is still open, I believe. And, of course, all these clinics, we welcome auditors, so you're welcome to come by and check us out.
And auditing at these clinics is usually, what, $20? It's not expensive at all. That's something that you definitely can do.
Yeah, $25 at the Kansas clinic, $20 for Deerfield. So, yeah, very reasonable.
Very good. Well, thank you, Mary, so much for putting such a great show together today. Some very interesting guests, and we appreciate them joining us. We appreciate Shelby, Sean, and Marsha. And I'll just hang on to that sound file if you'd like me to, for old time's sake. I have it labeled outhouse, so I can send it over if you really want a copy of it. But
I wouldn't mind the original.
I don't, you know, it's so funny because I was taping this from the audience. It was kind of a last-minute thing to tape everybody, and I wish I had thought about it ahead of time because I would have actually gotten a good copy from the people who did the mixing. But I didn't. I just taped it from the audience. But you sounded great. You were just a little fast.
Oh, my gosh. I was on high adrenaline. It was good times.
Well, we'll talk to you again next month. Have a great month, Mary. Good luck with the Z-Dunk. We're anxious to get reports every month of how the training's going.
Oh, yeah, I will have, and I will be showing her progress online as well, so that's going to be a lot of fun.
Best way to listen to our recorded version of our show is on the Horse Radio Network app on your iPhone or Android phone. Just go to the App Store, search for Horse Radio Network. It's free. It's easy. Download it from there. All 8 shows that we do are on there. So you can find Horses in the Morning, the recorded version, or any of the other shows that we do on the app. You can find Mary at marykitzmiller.com. All the details about all our upcoming clinics and all the pictures are on there as well. Thank you, everybody. Be safe. See ya, Mary.
See ya.